SiriusXM presents Stanford Pathfinders.
Stanford has 225,000 alumni living all over the globe in 151 countries, and they're some of the most amazing people you would ever want to meet.
A show about how the graduates of Stanford University are changing our lives and the world.
We'll hear very interesting things from business leaders in the technology sector, but well beyond that, the worlds of politics, entertainment, business, and beyond.
Inspiring stories from America's innovation heartland.
It's a place where people look to the future, not to the past, where they don't rest on their laurels. Think about the gold rush. Think about Stanford being formed in the late 1800s. And then Stanford was the beginning of Silicon Valley. And the ethos of Silicon Valley is deeply embedded in the Stanford spirit. It's a spirit of innovation, experimentation. It's a spirit of being willing to try new things and risk failure as long as you fail forward.
Welcome to Stanford Pathfinders.
General partner at Lightspeed Venture Partners, a leader in her field.
At Lightspeed, we're very focused on having folks with different experiences, different opinions, different mindsets around the table. We think that makes the discussion so much stronger.
She talks about listening to customers and being open to new ideas.
Focus on what matters. So really bring those wow stats to the front of your deck. We want to be dazzled. We want to make sure that we can see what's most important.
This week on Stanford Pathfinders, Nicole Quinn. Now, here's your host, Howard Wolf.
Being located in Silicon Valley, Stanford University has many, many alumni involved in the venture capital industry. But as many people know, the vast majority of these alums and people in the industry are men. That said, women are a growing percentage of venture capital investors, and today's guest on Stanford Pathfinders is one of the leading bright lights for women in venture capital. Nicole Quinn is a general partner at Lightspeed Venture Partners, where she invests in consumer companies that are quickly becoming part of popular culture and improving the way we live our lives. When you hear about these companies she's invested in and the way that she's thinking about investment, I think you'll be mighty impressed. Nicole, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me today, Howard.
So you appear to come at this startup thing quite honestly, having helped your dad with a startup of his own back in the 1990s. So tell us a bit about what that was and what you learned from that experience.
You are absolutely right. My first ever job was when I was about 10 years old, and it was helping my very entrepreneurial father start online pharmacies, which seems like it was great, and he was ahead of the times.
He was very ahead of the times.
That was the problem. He was too ahead of the times. And so online pharmacies, unfortunately, did not become a huge thing in England in the 1990s. So despite the fact we spent a good 5 years working together on this, it did not work out. But it's there that I really learned my, you know, love of entrepreneurship, learning the ups and the downs of working on startups. And I feel like that's where it really all began for me.
So you got the bug as a 10-year-old child.
And yes.
Even though it didn't really work, you still had the bug.
Exactly. Even more so, because I feel like sometimes when you don't succeed, it gives you so much more of that drive to then carry on and succeed at the next one.
So you've had an interesting path into the venture capital world because you worked on Wall Street for nearly a decade, then started a venture of your own, and then you ended up in the venture capital world. There was business school here at Stanford in between all that. But give us a sense for how that Wall Street experience, 10 years, right?
Yeah.
Informs
really.
Your work today as the general partner at a venture capital firm.
It's a really good question because at Lightspeed, we're very focused on having folks with different experiences, different opinions, different mindsets around the table. We think that makes the discussion so much stronger. And then as a team, as a, you know, one Lightspeed team, we can really help our portfolio companies. And so we have founders around the table, operators around the table. And then you're right. Like I spent some time working at a fintech startup and then doing my own wearable tech startup. But actually, I spent 9 years out on Wall Street. And so there are many lessons I learned. First of all, it definitely made me a lot better at Excel spreadsheets.
You have your PhD in Excel.
You get that at a very young age, 20 years old and an expert in Excel. But no, seriously. So the the space that I was lucky enough to cover was e-commerce. And the UK was always ahead of the US and all other countries in terms of e-commerce penetration. And so not only were there really interesting names like Net-a-Porter, Yuke's, ASOS that fell under the retail coverage universe, but also in the UK, investors are paying often 5-7 times forward revenue multiples for these e-commerce companies, which is starkly different to the US, where people tend to pay 1-2 times forward revenue multiples in public companies. So hopefully the US will move the way of UK investors in really valuing these e-commerce businesses. But that was really my foray, my love of e-commerce. And then from that, I actually then moved more into consumer internet. So I was lucky enough to work on the Pandora, Groupon, Facebook IPOs. And so I'd really think about working with management teams around the storytelling, which is so important to founders at any stage of this business, whether you're raising a seed, Series A, or you're going through an IPO and speaking to public investors. The storytelling is just so crucial in all of this. So that was one of the very important things that I learned and certainly help our founders with today.
And you came to Stanford's Graduate School of Business after the time on Wall Street?
After Wall Street, I then went to a fintech startup, Nutmeg, which is Europe's equivalent of Betterment and Wealthfront. And after that, yes, I came to GSB.
And what attracted you to the GSB?
Oh my gosh, I mean, what do you not love about being out here? I was comparing different business schools and I came out to Stanford and quite honestly, it blew my mind. I just feel like you are...
You had not been here before?
No, I'd actually never been to California before.
Oh my.
So I came out to GSB and just felt like everybody here was working on something that in their mind could possibly change the world. And I was learning little nuggets of the future from everybody I met with. In fact, there was a talk by Stacey Brown Philpot.
Oh, yes.
Who ended up being
TaskRabbit.
Exactly, a Lightspeed portfolio company. And so she really inspired me. And coming out here just gave me role models and made me realize like this is exactly where I'm meant to be.
So you invest in a lot of different areas, some of which are consumer products, and some of which have seemingly evangelical levels of support, like Rothy's Shoes. So how does this avid support occur? I mean, is it planned? Is it organic? Because you see these things happen, and it's like wildfire.
You are absolutely right. And to give an example in terms of what you're talking about, Howard, there are Facebook groups that have been set up called Rothy's Addicts for people who just absolutely adore these shoes. And to be honest with you, I do not believe that it can be planned. And so this is really something we look for within consumer. You know, at Lightspeed, we invest in all areas of consumer. I look at fintech, healthcare, sort of health and wellness, and then marketplaces and new frontier areas, as well as e-commerce. But so within e-commerce, we look for leading indicators of a true brand being built. And those leading indicators, to me, are areas like true organic growth. So is over half of your new customer intake coming from organic means? Is it word of mouth? That's a really important one from us.
As opposed to promotion and advertising and other things?
As opposed to people paying for it through Facebook and Google.
Okay.
It's like me saying to you, hey, Howard, you need to buy a pair of Rothy's for all the women in your life because they are the most comfortable shoes. They are sustainable. They're environmentally friendly. You can throw them in the washing machine if they get dirty. They come in all these incredible styles and quite frankly, let's go back to the most important thing, they are comfortable. So that's how customers talk about it. And so we heard about it through listening to customers. I always say, as an investor, you need to have two ears and one mouth, use them in that proportion. So we were listening to customers. They were talking about Rothy's. The NPS score was really high. The social media following was great. The referral rate was terrific. The repeat rate showed that customers were coming back time and time again. And so for us, it was very clear there was something very special happening at Rothy's.
I like my shoes. I don't love my shoes. I would never join a Facebook group for my shoes. But you're really serious that people are that sort of maniacal about these shoes, that that's the level of exuberance.
I mean, there are people who have 30, 40, 50 pairs of Rothy's. People have wardrobes separately just for their Rothies. It's incredible. It's love.
it definitely is. Something beyond my understanding. Okay. The number of women in the venture capital world is growing. Mm-hmm. But it's still a distinct minority in the investing community, right? The venture capital investment community. You, however, appear to see your gender sort of as a secret weapon of sorts, connecting both with female founders and customers. Do you play a special sort of role in the venture capital ecosystem? Do you see yourself as sort of in an interesting intersection of different things?
So you're absolutely right that I do see being a woman in venture capital is a terrific thing. I see it as a very good thing. I think that our job as investors is to really, you know, I mentioned it, be listening to the customer. So it helps that we are often the customer. It helps that over 90% of household decisions are made by a woman. So we can understand when something truly takes off, whether there's, you know, a marketplace that's suddenly gaining traction and growing 10x a year. Yes, it helps when you look at the numbers, but then more than that, like when you are actually the customer yourself, you can understand it at a deeper level as to why that's working. I also think there's a matter of resonating with the founders and expressing your views around, listen, like I am the customer, this is how I would think about it. And sharing that also with, like, you know, product views from startup days that I used to have at Nutmeg. My own thing. And I think those things kind of go hand in hand together. You really need to be helping founders from your own perspective. And then also the other angle is, you're right, there are less of us. That is changing, needs to change. It is changing. It helps you be memorable. And it also helps women really help one another out. There's this amazing community. Across the board of women helping one another out. All Reyes has done a great job of this. And I would just say that that's what it's about. They say empowered people empower other people. And so that's what women founders, women VCs all want for one another.
So let's go back to Rothy as it relates to what you just said. A male investor, venture capital investor, probably wouldn't have gotten it. Like, I didn't get it. When you said 30, I sat there with my eyes open like, are you kidding me? 30 of the exact, is it the exact same shoe? Like in different colors?
Well, one of my partners at Lightspeed, Jeremy Liu, he definitely gets all these things. So
don't discount men.
Exactly.
Entirely.
He understands Rothy's and all these companies very deeply. He was the first investor in Snapchat. And so he's terrific. He really understands when something's blowing up. You know, what we look for at Lightspeed is very much, is something quickly becoming part of popular culture? You know, whether that be in social media or marketplaces or e-commerce, is this, or quite frankly, in transport, I would also say. You know, I would argue that Bird and Lime have quickly exploded onto our streets and become part of popular culture.
These are the scooters.
They are indeed the scooters that you see everywhere.
Exactly.
So that's something we look for.
All right. So there seems to be a bit of debate in the investment world these days about whether or not it makes sense to invest in celebrity-founded companies. So your firm is an investor in companies founded by Lady Gaga, that's House, and Gwyneth Paltrow, that's Goop, and Jessica Alba, The Honest Company. And I'm guessing you might see this a little bit differently, that you see value in investing sometimes in celebrities because they bring something that other founders can't bring. So what are these people that question it missing?
So they always say being contrarian and right is exactly where you want to be as an investor. So it never worries us that other folks see the world differently. That's absolutely fine. But you're right that we have seen real success scenarios, both in our portfolio and elsewhere, of celebrities starting businesses and finding real traction very, very quickly. And so those three you just mentioned are great examples. Outside our portfolio, you see Rihanna with Fenty, and publicly they did $70 million in revenue in their first month. Yes, that's month, not year.
Wow.
And
the Kardashians.
Exactly. I was going to say Kylie Jenner, but actually all of the Kardashians. Incredible numbers. And so whether it be in beauty or elsewhere, we do find that celebrities, because of who they are and because of the following that they have, it is much easier to be able to get to significant revenue and also to be able to create a true brand much faster than without those folks.
But is it every celebrity that can do this, or is it just certain celebrities? Because you have to have business acumen, you have to have broad appeal, and you have to have a following. And not every celebrity is so disposed, right?
So true. So when we're looking at investments, first of all, we see a celebrity who comes to us with a business idea as an entrepreneur coming to us with a business idea. And so I think that has to be 101. You have to very much speak to them as you would with an entrepreneur. And so you need all those exact same things. You need the business acumen. You need them to have this drive and determination and desire to run through walls, not take no for an answer, and make sure that they go and get this done. Commitment to it. I would actually say commitment is more important with the celebrities because they have so many different places they could be and opportunities they could be doing. So they—
Does that concern you though? Like, you've got Gwyneth Paltrow or Jessica Alba who have a phenomenal career in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a lot of other things to do. And when they're doing a movie, they're taken out of production, right, in the business. So how does that all work?
So if you look at the number of movies that Gwyneth Paltrow or Jessica Alba, for example, have done since starting Goop and The Honest Company, respectively, it's lower than the number of movies that they were doing before. And that's because they're constantly thinking about the opportunity cost of going and doing something different. And so, yes, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow probably does a movie a year or a Netflix show a year. But it's got to be— it's got to reach a much higher bar because she wants to be doing Goop. Goop is her everything. And so that is something that she wants to be spending her time on. And it makes sense. You know, she's built a tremendous business there. Same with Jessica Alba and Lady Gaga. And so it means that you're going to then spend a little bit less time doing those other things. Although I do have to call out that if you're Goop and Gwyneth Paltrow, very smartly decided to combine the two. And so do a Netflix show about Goop.
Right.
And that show has been tremendous. I mean, the numbers are incredible. It helps the business. It's fascinating. People love it. It also is introducing a new type of customer to Goop, you know, as you'd expect. And so people who necessarily wouldn't be shopping with Goop before find out about it through Netflix. And then they come on over to the website.
Fantastic. All right, so let's talk about the role of the influencer in marketing today. We've touched upon it a little bit with the celebrities because they're obviously influencers. Are influencers sort of replacing classic marketing and promotion channels, or are they simply another piece of the puzzle? What's the role of the influencer?
I love this question because I feel like we're living in this world where Facebook and Google are getting increasingly more expensive. So your customer acquisition costs, if you're any company, are continuing to increase. And then we find that it is far faster and far cheaper to be able to turn a fan into a customer than it is to acquire a brand new customer. And so it's that theory, that thesis, that really drives our investment belief in backing influencers. So if you are a Kardashian, you have 100 million followers plus, then you have those 100 million people that all you have to do is tell them, hey, listen, I'm doing this great new beauty product or Spanx product. Buy it here. Link it through Instagram. Very easy for them. And that's much easier than just reaching out to a brand new customer who's never heard of you or your brand ever before on Facebook.
Are there other companies that you're involved in or know of where you've seen the influencer effect?
Yes, it's interesting because we touch on the companies that have the celebrities or influencers as founders, but there's other companies that do a tremendous job of really integrating influencers or celebs into their business model.
So they're not founded by celebrities, but they find a way to sort of engage celebrities in building their brand.
That's exactly right. So I'd say a couple of examples are an AR gaming company that I invested in called Illumix that have really done a great job at getting gaming influencers on board, as well as really engaging the Reddit community. Zola have have done an amazing job, the wedding registry business, through working with the Glee actors and actresses to do TV campaigns, which have been hugely successful. And then the other one I'd call out is Calm. So started off as a meditation app and then went into sleep. It's actually the only way that I manage to fall asleep these days, by listening to a Calm sleep story.
And people, what's a Calm sleep story?
Oh my gosh, so good. So I say that meditation maybe is the vitamin, where it's nice to have, you know, you should be meditating, but you don't always do it.
Yes.
Sleep stories is the painkiller. It's like, I can't get to sleep. I need to turn on a sleep story right now. So you turn on your Calm app, you open up a sleep story, and then Stephen Fry or Matthew McConaughey read you a half an hour bedtime story, such as The Velveteen Rabbit. And it's really very successful. And people call it the Matthew McConaughey app, because Matthew McConaughey can literally lull you into sleep on this app. So they have done a very good job with working with influencers.
This is Stanford Pathfinders. I'm Howard Wolf. More with Nicole Quinn, a general partner at Lightspeed Venture Partners, next on Sirius XM. This is Stanford Pathfinders. I'm Howard Wolf, and I'm speaking with Nicole Quinn, a general partner at Lightspeed Venture Partners. So let's talk about diversity. We talked a little bit earlier about women in the venture capital industry and how you're still in minority but growing, and that this can be sort of one of your special powers, right? Because you're few and far between. You've been pretty vocal in some of that, which you've written and where you've been interviewed, about the importance of diversity at all levels in the startup world. So I'm not talking about venture capital firms. I'm talking about the startup world itself, right? So tell me about why this is a mission for you. Is it a mission? It sounds like it's
yes.
a mission. It seems like it's a mission. And if it is a mission, why?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's super important to me. It's super important to everybody at our firm. And I would also say all the women VCs that I come across. And we have one of the actionable items that we did to try and make a difference here is we created a letter, and we sent this letter to every single one of our startups. Pretty much everybody is now signed, where we ask them if they're making any senior hire or bringing on any new board member, we want to make sure that they consider all underrepresented groups. And so, yes, it's women, as you say, but it's actually more broad than that. It is them considering all underrepresented groups.
This is like the Rooney rule in football, where they're looking for head coaches, right? It's a very similar sort of – that
very
hasn't worked
similar.
All that well there, though. But is it working with you?
It's really working, because I think you have to make sure that you put time and resources and attention on this. You got to put that behind it. And so we at Lightspeed have an amazing hiring team, a really strong PR marketing team, a growth hacking team. And so all of our operations teams behind the scenes at Lightspeed are reaching out to our companies and saying, hey, you know, we're organizing this event. Do you want to come? We have these amazing female executives that are looking for their next thing. Can we introduce you? Just last week, we did a Lightspeed board event where we invited all of our portfolio companies and then amazing execs, which was a people of color board event. And it really was hugely successful in introducing people. A couple of people are now looking to hire folks that they met at that event. And we want to be doing more of this. That's really just the start for us. And yeah.
So I have a lot of friends who are in the venture capital business like you.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems wherever they go, when they meet young people, inevitably they get asked questions by the young people. What are the three tips you would give me as an entrepreneur? So my guess is that we have a lot of people listening who are saying, ooh, this is fantastic. Nicole sounds like she really knows what she's doing. What would be three or four or five tips you would give entrepreneurs that they need to think about as they're thinking about starting a business or growing a business?
So in the early days, there are certainly lots of things to think about. I would say, A, let's come back to that storytelling point that we touched on earlier. Storytelling is so important. So really find out what is your authentic story. So why are you the founder or the founding team to be doing this? And convey that in the story, because that's exactly what founders want to be doing. Like, there's many different startups in the exact same spaces, but we need to better understand why you guys are the team to be doing this. Secondly, I would say focus on what matters. So really bring those wow stats to the front of your deck. We want to be dazzled. We want to make sure that we can see what's most important. Quite often, founders will bury the lead and will find that they have this incredible revenue chart that's growing, growing incredibly quickly, but it's right at the back of the deck.
It's in the appendix.
Exactly. So lead with what's important. Really show investors what's so special about your business. Put that up front. Use that in your storytelling. It's also, it's being authentic. It's doing what's important to you, making sure that we know that you're doing this for the right reasons. It's also showing us that you're somebody who can run through the walls. I mentioned this earlier. I love this in founders. I think that's really special founders who just won't take no for an answer. It's almost a little bit like naivety is a good thing because you don't want to focus on all the reasons why the company could fail because
you'd never do it.
Exactly.
Right.
You never would. As an investor, sometimes I have to think if everything went right, for this company, if all the things that could possibly go right, how big an opportunity could this possibly be? And that's how I love the early stage founders to think as well. And we get excited when we see that.
What about the question, do you care that they're trying to solve a problem or is it enough to be a business that'll just make a lot of money?
We do definitely, we care about a problem. We care more about whether there's product market fit and founder product fit and founder market fit. We care about those things more because that's where I think that the real magic happens. I also think that the definition of problem is defined differently by different folks. And so something that I deem to be a problem, you might not, but it could still be a tremendous business. And quite often we find businesses like Uber will start with a smaller market where you might think, oh, rich people getting a limousine, is that necessarily a problem?
Right.
But then, oh, yes. Actually, taking over the whole taxi industry, that is far different. And same with Airbnb, right? Couches where they started, very different to where they are now.
Okay, final question, 15 seconds. Something you're working on that you're excited about, don't share anything that's proprietary, that you're really excited about.
For me, I'm constantly thinking about what the next platform will be. So we've had web, mobile, and we don't yet know what the next platform is. This is actually why we invest in brands and marketplaces, because they are companies that will transcend across platforms. But when we're thinking about what is the next platform? Could it be VR, AR, or voice? We think voice. Voice to us is the really exciting next platform where if discoverability and search can be solved, then we have something really exciting on our hands.
You heard it here first. Nicole, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Howard. We had fun. This was great.
Thank you for listening to Stanford Pathfinders on SiriusXM. Listen to this and other episodes anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app.